I'd like you to accompany me today in an interesting journey analyzing, I think, one of the strangest things that happened in the history of Am Yisrael. It happened about 150 years ago, and at the time it caused a bit of a small ruckus, but not too much. And now I'd like to, so to speak, bring the issue back to life. And this is regarding a gadol who isn't that famous, but will become very famous very soon. And his name is Rabbi Yehuda Asad. Rabbi Yehuda Asad, who most of you, when you hear that name, have immediately two connotations. One is that the president of Syria? So no, it isn't. That's a different guy. No relation. And the other connotation usually is, isn't that the guy that's quoted by Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, which is a description of potentially anyone in the world. So it's not that guy either. Well, it is. But the Maria Asad, who sadly is much less famous than he should be, I'll paint a bit of a background picture in order that we can appreciate who it is that we're talking about, and that will give more substance to the story that comes at the end, which will be the basis of the Shia. The Maria Asad lived, he was born about 210 years ago in Hungary, and he was regarded by many as definitely one of the Gdolei Hador, locally in Hungary and generally speaking in Europe. He was not a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, but he was very close to the Chasam Sofer. Some even regard him as the Mamshich HaDerech, the next generation, the continuer of the Chasam Sofer in regards to Psak in that area in Hungary, and in regards to fighting against the Reform. He was close to the Ksav Sofer and to the Maram Shik, and I think he was even regarded by them as being on a high level. He was a bit older than them, as we'll see in one of the stories. And before we get to the main point of Shia, which is what happened to him soon after he died, I'll just tell a couple of stories about what happened to him when he was alive, in way of an introduction. There are a few famous stories. One of my favorite stories is that it was known that he never looked at himself in the mirror. And that itself was not so rare in those days. We know that many men, considered it either asur or inappropriate to use a mirror. And already in the Gemara and the Rishonim we have this discussion if looking in the mirror for a man is begadisha or not. Today, based on social changes, men aren't really men, they're a little bit like women. And self-grooming, or at least taking care of one's appearance, is considered a relatively normal thing, even for a man. So today it's widely accepted that looking in mirrors is okay. In those days, it was still very common, fairly common, for a Rabbanim to not ever look in mirrors. So he basically went through his whole life without having the faintest clue what he looked like. And this led to the following interesting story. Oh, I just lost you guys. I see you're still there, but I don't know how this works. Are we still good? Showing up on the screen. Okay. This is where it gets interesting. How do I know we're still on? We're not still on, right? Yeah. We're good? Okay, well I can't see you, so give me a sign. At the time of the Maria Asad, one of the great issues of the day was the attempt by the Orthodox Rabbanim to separate the Orthodox community from the Reform communities that were growing in numbers and in strength. And for this purpose, the Maria Asad led a mission of other great Rabbanim and had a meeting with the king. I think his name was Franz Joseph, the king of the area. And the meeting was with the Maram Shik and the Ksav Sofer, and the Maram Ash, and many of the Gdolei Hador, but the mission was led by the Maria Asad. He was the eldest and considered the most wise and respectable of them all. And the story goes that when they entered the palace of the king, the entrance room, the waiting room, was walled, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, with mirrors. So as they walked in, the Maria Asad saw in front of him what appeared to be already a group of Rabbanim standing in the waiting room. And he pointed to one of them, and he said, I think that one should lead the mission. He looks like a Malach Hashem, he looks like an angel, very Chashev, he should lead the mission. And little did he know that he was pointing at himself, and he did in fact lead the mission. And it's Dafka this element, his tremendous holy look, that is the basis to the next story, which is the one that we're going to deal with. The Maria Asad, in addition to never looking in the mirror, he also never allowed that a photo should be taken of him. And again, this is the early days of photography anyway, and Gedolim pictures were not that common. And some Gedolim, still today, insist that their picture shall never be taken. And he insisted throughout his life that his picture shall never be taken, either a photo or a drawing of him shall never be taken. And this makes the following point even more interesting. Soon after he died, a group of people got together and decided that we need a picture of the Maria Sa. And there are two legends, two stories, as we'll see in a minute, as to why they wanted the picture. But either way, and this is agreed upon and accepted and proven, and no one doubts the actual fact, what they did is quite bizarre. What they did is they took his body, his dead body, and they dressed him in his Shabbos clothes, and they put on his furry hat, and they propped him up on a chair, and they put a big Gemara in his hand, and of course, it didn't say smile, it didn't say cheese, but they took a photo of him. And we have this photo today. I urge you after this year, you can Google it. It's on the Maria Sa's Wikipedia page in Hebrew and English. We have, all over the internet, we have this photo, the only surviving, only existing photo of the Maria Sa'd, which was, according to everyone, taken post-mortem. This is the photo we have. You can look at it. I spent many long minutes staring at this photo, trying to see if there's any proof to the fact that he's maybe dead or is he alive. It's really hard to tell. He's holding the Gemara, but it's resting on his knee. The way his hand is positioned, it could be supported by the Gemara. He has a very vacant look in his eyes, which is usually the case when one is dead. And this is the photo we have. Now, why did they do it? So there are two traditions. His grandson, when writing his biography, an introduction to one of his Sfarim, his grandson writes that it was done by Talmidim that had a tremendous passion and desire to have a Gedolim picture. This was a Gedolim picture that was literally to die for. They had to have the picture. And so since throughout his life, he never allowed the picture to be taken, so they had to take the opportunity of doing it after he was dead against his will. That's one tradition. The other tradition I found in some other sources is that it was done, and this might even be more problematic from a halachic point of view. The other tradition is that it was done to make money. Why did they need money? So they say that he had several single daughters that were unmarried yet, as most single people are, and there was no money left in the house to marry them off. So they had a great idea. There are no Gedolim pictures of the Maria Sa'd, because he never allowed it. So let's take this photo of him after he's dead. We'll sell it. I found one source that actually cites the exact amount of money. I don't know what it is, 1,200 florins, some type of Hungarian coin. The exact amount of money that was made from the sales of this picture. And this could be a greater problem, as we'll see, because it's actually getting physical hana from the dead body. Now, again, from all the sources that I've seen, no one doubts the authenticity of this event. The big question is, how in the world did this happen, and was it justified halachically? When the Maria Sa'd's grandson finishes writing this piece of the biography, so he writes what we would expect to write in any good story like this, that all the people that were involved in giving the heter or in taking the photo, they all died soon after. It doesn't say they died specifically within the year, but it says they all died soon after as a clear sign from Hashem that this was the wrong thing to do. And I want to discuss from a halachic perspective what exactly is the issur involved in such a thing. Now, it's interesting. I expected to find tons of material about this. Such a tremendous, if you imagine today, one of Gedolei HaDor dying, and such a thing being done to his body, it would be in every newspaper, and every posek would write a tshuva about it. It would be very much the talk of the day. But surprisingly, with all the searches and all the researching that I did, I found hardly any reference in any sefer to this actual story, except for one or two, which I'll quote very soon. What I did find is that approximately 30 years later, in a Hungarian Torah journal called Vajlaket Yosef, or in its Hungarian name, Vajlaket Joseph, printed on the front cover, this is a Hungarian Torah journal that came out twice a month, and it was very much like we have today, the Torah journals, that part of it is tshuvas that are written in by contemporary poskim, and part of it is different riddles and questions to answer the Shabbos table, and part of it is advertising new sforim. I found in one edition, advertising, this just out, Maram Shik's, Charles and Shuvas, first published. It's a nice peek into life in Hungary 130 years ago. And in one of the volumes, the editor was asked a very similar question, Halacha L'maaseh. And his question was slightly easier, less problematic because of the following reason we'll see, but still the same conceptual issue. The family was asked by two brothers whose father was Nifter, and they just happened to not have any photos of the father. And they wanted to have a picture of the father, not for money. They didn't want to dress him as he was, lying in the coffin. They wanted to take a photo of him, so they should have a thing to remember their father by. And this person asked the editor of this journal, that's mutter, or maybe that's considered deriving benefit, getting hana from the mace. And this question that was sent to the editor started an interesting discussion that went on for several weeks of this journal, back and forth between the editor, as we'll see soon, was Meikel, and another Rav, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, not the Menchas Yitzchak, different than earlier Rav Yitzchak Weiss, who was very machmer. And I'll try to describe today, in the short points, the main argument they had. Because basically the Shaila is, there is an Isur Daraisa to derive Hana from the a dead Jewish body, the body of a dead Jew. This Gemara is halacha cited in the Gemara of Arazara. The Gemara there, the topic over there is not at all dead bodies. The topic over there is the Isur to drink Yei Nesech, proper Yei Nesech that was actually used to worship an idol. And the Gemara says it's also in the Raisa because there's a hekesh between Yei Nesech and Zivchei Meisim, a Tikrovas of Arazara. And Tikrovas of Arazara, there's a hekesh between that and the mace itself, Zivchei Meisim, a hekesh between the Zevach of an Avarazara and the mace. And the mace itself, there's a hekesh between Vatamo Chamiriam, between Miriam, and between Egla Rufa. And there's in Egla Rufa itself, the Parsha says, Kaper Lam Chai Israel. So it's a mentioning of Kapara, like Kochin. So we have this five-step chain of Hekeshim, Zer Shabbos, going all the way from Yei Nesech down to Kochin. And in the middle, right in the middle of that chain, we have mace. There's a Beferish in the Gemara, and it appears to be a Disodoraisa. The Zechemet brings that the vast majority of all Rishon and Mechonim hold that it is in fact a real Isodoraisa, not just an Asmachta. There is an Isodoraisa to derive Hana from a mace, like any other Isra Hana, like Kilaim, like Orla. It's Asru Behana. There is a discussion, which we'll see later on, about a dead Goy. That's a Machlokas Rishonim, and a Machlokas Poskim. If this Isra applies also to a dead Goy, and if it does, is it Doraisa or Derabanan? Being that there is an Isur Daraisa to derive Hana from a dead body, the body of a dead Jew, so now rises the question, so that would include, usually Isur Hana would include using the Chefta, say obviously for eating, or for using it some other way to derive physical pleasure, or even to sell, to benefit financially based on it, or even not to sell, even to use it to make money. For example, the Gemara of Arazara, that the person can't work as a porter carrying barrels of Yei Nesech, even though he's not actually using the Yei Nesech itself to get money, he's making money b'schus the existence of the Yei Nesech, because Rotze b'kiyomo, he's getting money, he's mistaker b'isuri hana. All these things are included in the Isur to get hana from an object, which is asur b'hana. And now the question is, would that Isur also include taking a photo of an object, which is asur b'hana? And here the question is twofold. Would the Isur include etzem, the taking of the photo? Now I have a photo. I got the photo b'schus the mace. And maybe a bigger problem, would the Isra include selling that photo and actually benefiting financially, making money off a photo which came into existence through the body of a Jewish, of a dead Jew? Now, the Maisa, the truth is that when it comes to the actual case of the Maria Sad, there isn't really much of a Shaila. It's quite poshut that what they did was Osir. And this is commented by several people that it's quite poshut that what they did to him was Osir, because what they did to him wasn't just to take a photo of a dead person and actually sell it for money. On that part, we can negotiate soon if that's also or not. What they did to him was clearly a bizayon amase. What they did to him is to take a dead body and to dress it like a doll, to dress it with Shabbos clothes, and to prop it up, and to stick a gemara in its hand, and to take a photo of it. That is clearly a bizayon of the mace, even more so that it was the one thing that he never agreed to be done to him while he was alive. So clearly what they did to him is Osir, and therefore we can understand why those people died. But if we were to isolate the Shaila itself, to take away that technical point, that there was a bizarre Ames Mitzah that they dressed him, and we would just have the question itself of taking a photo of a dead body, then we could really have discussion about is that included in the Isur Hanam in Ames. So interestingly, Rabbi Yitzchak Weiss, the one who responded to the editor's question in this journal of Halakhot Yosef, this was later published in a Shal Zin Tshuvas of his called Siach Yitzchak, published many years after he died, but originally it was only to be found in this journal in Hungary 130 years ago. And he claimed that it's Asur Midoraisa to take a photo of a dead person, even if it's not Almanas to sell. That's in the fact that you are benefiting by getting a photo, satisfying your need, having what to look at. That's in the fact that you're getting that is a violation of the Isur Doraisa of Hanami Nameis. And to support this opinion, he brings three proofs. And what we're going to show today, hopefully, very much based on what the editor, Rav Yosef Schwartz, the editor of this journal, says, that seemingly his three proofs are not only not real proofs, it's actually a tremendous tzorchin why one could even suggest that they're real proofs. Sometimes there's a kasha, and you need a teretz. Sometimes you need to work hard to explain why the kasha might possibly be a kasha. So over here we'll see that the proofs are seemingly bizarre. Proof number one of three. The first proof he brings from an even more disturbing shaila that happened earlier on. We thought that dressing up the Maria Sad's dead body like a puppet and taking a photo was disturbing, so check out the next case. The next case was a shaila lemaise that happened and was brought to Rav Yonatan Ivershitz. It's discussed in the Sefer Binah Le'itim, as a Sefer which is a parish on Hilchos Yom Tov, a Rambam, called Binah Le'itim. And in that question, towards the end of a very long section, he quotes the following maise. To give a bit of background to understand the context of this maise and why it's in Hilchos Yom Tov, we have to say a few words about the din of a nefel. There is a din, of course, mitzvah d'oraisa, to bury every dead Jew, to bury a mace. The question is, does this mitzvah d'oraisa of mitzvah k'vura and the isser of halanas mace, does this mitzvah apply also to a nefel, to a stillborn? So we find it's a machlokes, rishonim, achronim, machlokes, the poskim, the Hagos Maimonios in Hilchos Mila, right, so there is no chiyuv d'oraisa mitzad mitzvah k'vura to bury a nefel. Why is this in Hilchos Mila? Should be in Hilchos Avel and Hilchos Kuvur. Should be somewhere else. What's it got to do with Hilchos Mila? So the connection is like this, that there is a minag, not a chiyuv, not a mitzvah. There is a minag to perform Bris Mila on the Nefel before they bury him. There are different shitos as to why there is no mitzvah, the Oraisa, to actually do Bris Mila on a dead baby. Interesting, you would think it's the most poshut thing in the world. He's dead, but it's actually not that poshut. And there's a nice machlokas we showed him as to why we don't perform Bris Mila on a dead baby. And that machlokas reflects upon the greater issue of, is the mitzvah of Mila actually a direct mitzvah on the father? Maybe the mitzvah is really on the son, and the father just fulfills it for him. And for more detail on that, I can refer you to Aliva Demis Kiddushin in its spare time. But either way, there is a minhag to do Bris Mila on the Nefel. And in that context, while discussing that, Dagos Maimonios starts talking about Kvura by Nefel. And he writes that according to his opinion, there is no mitzvah k'vura by a nefel, and there's no real nafkamina from that mitzad itself, because we will bury the nefel, bein mitzad, what else will we do, and bein mitzad to get rid of it so that there shouldn't be an issue of tuma, but there is no mitzvah k'vura. And nafkamina really is Yom Tov Sheni. Because in Yom Tov Sheni, you can violate the Yisud Rabban on the minhag of Yom Tov in order to do k'vura. But that's only because there's a mitzvah k'vura. But if we hold it by Nefel, there's no mitzvah k'vura, so then you can't do it. Yom Tov Sheni, you have to push it off. And the Magen Avraham argues on this. The Magen Avraham holds that there is a mitzvah k'vura d'oraisa by Nefel. What's the Hagos Maimonios proof that there is no mitzvah? Interesting proof. You all remember the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Tet, or Daf Yud, I think it's Daf Tet. The Gemara that discusses that sometimes people would throw Nefel into a bor, and then sometimes a Kohen would want to go and peek into the bar to see if the Nefel was a Zachar or an Akeva, to see if he was well-formed, to see if there's a din that the mother is Tameh, and what have you. Says the Agos Maimonios, you see from that story that the Nefel wasn't buried. He was thrown in a pit, and he was still exposed, because the Kohen could look inside and see him. That's a riot, that there's no mitzvah k'vura. The Magen Avraham responds in a very interesting thing, and he says, what do you mean there's no mitzvah k'vura? That was the k'vura. They put him underground. Interesting. The question is, what's called Pura? Is it enough that he's placed depth-wise underground? Kanireh, that's the Magen Avraham's approach. Or does he have to be covered? The Pashtus is, according to most poskim, that he does have to be covered, at least with a thin layer of earth. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva that no, to be Mekana Mitzvah Pura, you need three Tfachim of earth above him. That's an interesting Bacholkes, if there's a Mitzvah Pura, the Raisa by Nefil or not. And there are other interesting proofs why there should or shouldn't be. Behuli. So in this context, Rav Yonatan Ivershitz, in a Sefer Binah Le'itim on the Rambam Hilchos Yom Tov, he discusses at length, can you bury a Nefel on Yom Tov Sheni, depending on the question of, is the mitzvah k'vura or not? Right towards the end of the piece, he ends with a shocking and disturbing case that happened. He said that a shaila was asked to a friend of his, a different famous rabbi, and that rabbi forwarded the question to Rav Yonatan Ivershitz. What was the question? There was a woman in that time that miscarried, and the Nefel, a stillborn, had a particularly disfigured shape. It had a Tzura Mishuna. And we already know from Mishnayos in Nida and other sources that there's mentioning references to different shapes of Nephilim that are in different shapes, sometimes resembling even animals. And depending on that, we can determine if they're Nefel or not, the Hule, and if they're in Tame. So it doesn't say exactly what was wrong with him, but he was clearly a miscarriage at an early stage of the pregnancy, and he was disfigured. The husband of this poor woman, he came to the Rav with the following shocking shaila. he was very poor, and he saw this, very much to everyone's dismay, as an opportunity to make a little bit of money. And what he wanted to do was to tour around, to go around his area, or everywhere that he could, with this stillborn, and basically to make a freak show out of his stillborn. He wanted to show it to people, and to charge money for looking at this disfigured stillborn. And this question, which is obviously a big and disturbing question, was forwarded to Rav Yonasan Ivershitz. And Rav Yonasan Ivershitz paskened that it's definitely aser. Why? He said two reasons. Number one, the Maisa de Mina gets to bury him. Even if you say that there's no mitzvah d'oraisa to bury him, it's at kvura, the bevada, it's a minak. So you can't violate the minak. Okay, that's a small reason. But then he says a much bigger reason. He says, bevada, it's aser, because even if there's no mitzvah kvura by Nefel, he is metame, and therefore he's also aser bahana midoraisa. Because being aser bahana, the din that it makes is aser bahana, is not a function of if he's chayving kvura or not. That has different criteria. It's a function of if he's metame or not, and therefore there's iser hana daraisa from this stillborn. And mimele, to go around and show it to people, is a violation of the iser hana. Adkan. Now, I purposely missed out the punchline of his answer, and I'll say it later, because if I would say the punchline, the following sentence that I'm about to say wouldn't make any sense. So I'll get back to that later. So Rabbi Yitzchak Weiss quotes this psak of Yonasan Ivershitz, and he says, what do you see over here? You see that walking around and showing people a mace is considered an Isser Hana. That's a raya, that even Hana from looking at something is included in the Isser Daraisa of getting Hana from a mace. Because Yasser on him to go around showing it to people, because looking at it is considered a Hana. That's proof number one, and we'll get back to that later on and show why that's not a proof at all. The second proof he brings, very similar, and also the refutation is very similar. The second proof is that there is a ravid quoted in the Beis Yosef in Hilchos Einesech that says that the minhag was in those days, if a person wanted to advertise that he was selling wine, so he would either hold up in public, or he would send someone to hold up a sample of his wine in the market. People would see the wine, they would say, that looks like nice wine, we'll go and buy wine by that guy. So the Ravid said, though, you should be careful not to give that wine to a goy to hold up in public, to draw customers. Because once the goy touches it, it's tam yena. And immediately you can't get hana, and you'll be getting hana from it. It says again, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, you see from here that people looking at the wine is considered the violation of the Isser Hana. Very similar to the first proof, people looking at the stillborn, people looking at the wine, that is considered seemingly a violation of the Isser Hana. And once again, we'll get back to that in a minute and show why seemingly the raya doesn't even begin. The third raya he brings, lichor, it begins, but it ends very, very abruptly. The third raya he brings, and it's almost impossible to talk about anything post-mortem and not quote the Nota Biyuda, because the Nota Biyuda is one of the earliest and most famous that discussed the matters of dealing with dead bodies, and the famous Shaila about performing autopsies for medical research. And very famously, we can't go into the whole tshuva, it's a whole separate issue, but very famously, he says that it's aser. However, it's mutter if there's pikuach nefesh, as long as we define what pikuach nefesh is, and that's the famous discussion of a chole lefanenu, that if two ill people come in, and they appear to have the same condition, and one dies, so then he says it's mutter to perform the autopsy in order to get the information which is needed to save the second one. But to do it stam, because maybe one day we'll find another person who needs that information, that's not called pikuach nefesh. Interesting that at the time, when he said it, and why he said it, was for a chumrah, basically because in those days that would be almost rare, maybe non-existent, that two people will come in exactly at the same time. So general autopsies basically were banned, halachically based on this psak. Dafka today, his machmir psak flips and turns into a tremendous kula. Because today we are always, in every place in the world, constantly in a state of chole befanenu. Because any information that one doctor, one hospital will derive from an autopsy will immediately be able to be applied anywhere else in the world. And at every given moment, there are always people that need that same treatment. So, Rav Moshe famously, and the Aruch Haner and Shavuot Bin Lutzion, they are machmir, and they say that even if there is pikuach nefesh, well, even if there is a chole befanenu, then it's not considered pikuach nefesh, or in the Aruch Haner's nusach, pikuach nefesh isn't matter this issur. But that's a separate subject for a different time. Either way, says Rabbi Yitzchak Weiss, what do you see in this shuva? You see that the Nota Biyuda was machmir, that it's aser mideraisa to do medical research on the body of a dead Jew. So you're looking at him, you're taking in the information, and that's considered an Isser Hana. Adkan, the three proofs of Rav Yitzchak's advice. Now we're doing this quite quickly, but the editor of this journal, Vaylaket Yosef, Rav Yosef Schwartz, he shows, and I think it's quite impossible to argue on him because what he says is so poshut and so clear, that all of these three proofs seem to not even begin. The first two proofs are based on seemingly the same simple mistake, not even reading the source properly. If we go back to the first and very disturbing case of Rav Yonasan Avishitz, that he assured this poor person to travel around his village and to show people this disfigured stillborn. So when Rav Yitzchak Weiss said this is a raya that looking, why did he assert? Because it was assert b'hana. So Rav Yitzchak Weiss says this is a proof that even looking is considered the hana that's assert. Apart from the fact that there's a much more simple reason why it should be assert, it's actually befeirush in the last line of the piece. In the last line of the piece, Rav Yonasan Avishitz writes, it's assert because the stillborn is assert b'hana, and therefore it's assert for him to make money by showing it to people and collecting a fee. So, adrabah, it's befeirush in the piece that the only violation of the Isser Hana was the fact that he was getting money. That was the whole shaila, can he collect money? And not just mitzad that, it says befeirush in the last line, it's asr bahana for him to collect money for people looking at. So it's nothing to do with our sugya. We don't see over there that deriving hana from looking is an Isser Hana. You see from there that making money off of an Isser Hana is asr. And no one argues on that. That is the original thing that is asked to do with something which is asr bahana, to sell it, to rent it out, or to show it and get money. That's all the same thing. So l'chora, the first proof doesn't have a beginning. It's based on a total mistake and not even reading properly the last line of the piece it was taken from. And the second proof, even though here there's no mistake in reading the text, it's based on the same mistake, the pashtus. The second proof from the Raivet that he said that it's asr to advertise my wine shop by giving wine to a goy, because when the goy touches the wine, it becomes asr bahana. And then people are looking at it, and they're getting hana. That isn't the isr. The isr isn't that people are looking and saying, wow, that's beautiful wine. What person looks at a cup of wine and says, wow, that's beautiful wine? No, some people. But that's not the pshat. The pshat is, of course, the main topic over there. He's using the wine as an advertisement to draw in customers. And he's getting money from it. That's the isr hana. What would be, for example, if everyone in the city, before that, meaning according to the Rav Yitzchak's wise pshat, the pshat in the Raivet was that I shouldn't give my wine to a goy to advertise for me, because then the Jews in the city that look at the wine will be nichshal in enjoying a nesach. That's a very far-fetched pshat. The simple pshat is that it's also for me to give because I'm getting hana. The Raivet didn't mention anything that I'm over on lifnei iver, I'm b'machshel a people, and what if I live in a city with goyim? So there's no leaf neighbor copy this isser of getting hana from Yei Nesech, from Stam Yeinam, Isser Derabanan. So seemingly the second proof is mistaken, just like the first one, and the isser the Raivet was talking about, the isser hana was deriving financial benefit and profit from an isser hana, and nothing to do with enjoying looking at something asr b'hana. The third proof, from the note of Yudah, is l'chora a good proof, but Lamaise, all it takes is a simple and careful reading of that tshuva of the note of Yuda to see that the proof doesn't begin either. Why so? So what did Rav Yitzchak Weiss Taina? He said that the note of Yuda strictly assert performing medical research on the body of a dead Jew. So you see the collecting information, which is equivalent to getting hana, is assert by something which is assert by hana. If you read the tshuva of the note of Yuda, you actually see the exact opposite. The exact opposite. The tshuva of the note of Yuda, which is so famous for saying it in Aser, mentions two other isurim why autopsies are Aser. One is nivel ames, isur to be fine in the beginning of chulin, the sugya of how do we know we follow rov. So the Gemara that discusses that we cannot perform an autopsy on the victim of a murder in order to find out if we should execute the murderer, because that will be nivel ames. And that's a discussion regarding learning Rov Midoraisa. So we have two things here. We have, number one, a mocker that it's also to do Nevel Ames. Number two, a mocker that it's Midoraisa. And there's also the Gemara, right at the end of Bava Basra, with a similar story, that there was a case where not even autopsy, just uncovering a dead body was required in order to solve a monetary dispute, to see if the buried person was a Katan or a Gadol, Nafkamina, the who gets the Yerusha, and Rabbi Akiva Paskin over there, that it's Aser. So it's an Isra of Nivel Ameis. Interesting discussion in of itself. What's the Makar of the Isra? But there is an Isra of Nivel Ameis, and that's reason number one, why it's Aser to perform an autopsy. The second reason is that it's a bittul of the mitzvah's Kvura. There is a mitzvah to do Kvura, and the Kvura should be done as soon as possible, definitely not to let it go from day to night, from night to day. So there's an Isra to do autopsies, just meets out the fact that it's mevatel or doche the kvura. In many cases, when parts have to be removed, possibly destroyed, so there'll be a total bittul kvura on those organs. And those are the two reasons that the Noda Buda mentioned. Adarabba, so much so that the Chasam Sofer, in his equally famous tshuva on this, he asks Akasha. He says, I don't get the Noda Buda. Why did he not say that it's also Aser because of Isra Hana? He should have said three reasons to make it Aser. So this proof of Rav Yitzchak Weiss from the Noda Buda that getting hana from a mace is aser mitzad, that looking at a mace and deriving hana is aser mitzad isra hana, and he tries to support himself from the Noda Buda, is actually refuted from that exact source, because the Noda Buda doesn't mention that marker. Why doesn't he? So there's a tshuva of the Machane Chaim. Machane Chaim was written by Rav Chaim Sofer, no relation, but a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. And the Machane Chaim, he said the following, this could be Lav Dafka, you have to agree to this, but this is his chat. And he says that the reason the Noda Buda did not mention the learning medicine, that medical research on a dead Jew is also because of the Isra Hanaf taking in information, is exactly for this reason that we're discussing now, because that's not called getting Hana, at least by Hana from a mace. He says the Isra Hanaf from a mace is only to be nana from the mace gufo, either to use it, to make some kind of oil with it, to be nana baguf, or to sell it. But deriving intellectual profit, either enjoying looking at it or getting information from the mace, that is not called getting hana from the mace. And it's interesting, the interesting Gemara, Chazanish quotes this, the Gemara in Bukhoros, that it says that that some Tanaim, they performed an interesting experiment where it was quite hard in those days to get a dead body that you can violate and use for studying halacha, but they got the body of a woman who was killed by the king, and kind of no one cared, and it says that they cooked her, they boiled her, and they used her to count how many Eivarim a woman has. So the Chazon Ish says you can prove one of two things from that Gemara. Because the Chor of that Gemara is a Raya that you can perform autopsies. Elama, the woman was non-Jewish. So says the Chazon Ish, you can prove one of two things. Either you can prove from this Gemara that there is no Isra Hana by a Goy, or you can prove from this Gemara that studying medicine is not considered hana. Now, those things could both be true, but you can't prove both of them from that Gemara, because either one by itself would be enough to explain what they did. So interesting, this is what the Machane Chaim claimed already earlier, that deriving intellectual knowledge and or hana from looking at a dead body is not a violation of the Isra Hana, and I will explain basically why all the proofs were not proofs. And that was the approach of the editor of this journal, Yossi Schwartz, where he said, and then he put it in very extreme terms, how could it even be possible, right, Ketzad Yaleh Al Hadat, that looking at something and enjoying it is included in Isra Hana? That would mean that you can't look at Chametz on Pesach. That would mean that you can't look at Orla, that you can't look at Kilayim, that you can't look at Hegdesh. So when you bring a Korban, you have to make sure to have your eyes closed the whole time. More than that, Chazal said that when Am Yisrael came to the Beis HaMikdash, they would bring out the Aron, so that we could see the Kruvim and see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. They would bring it out to show us something with the most Asur B'Hana thing, the thing that when the people went into the Kodesh HaKodashim to fix the Kodesh HaKodashim, so they would put them in a special trap, they wouldn't be able to feed their eyes off the Hekdesh, so we want to prevent it. But when there was a Tzorach or a positive reason, they would actually bring it out and show it to us. How would we feast our eyes on something which is Asur B'Hana? Clearly that's not called the Nisra Hana. So in the Maria Sad's case, Vivade, what they did was terrible because there was a bizayontes goof, like moving him around like a ragdoll. But clapping the Shaila itself of taking a photo from a dead body and using it to look at and to appreciate, that lichora bepashtis should not be osur. So that's the first nekuda. The question is, what about selling it and making money? Or what about the photographer getting paid for his job? So that lichora everyone should say is osur. The photographer getting paid to take the photo, or an artist getting paid to draw the picture, that's mamish like the case where someone is carrying barrels of Yei Nesech and he's getting paid. So he's not actually deriving benefit directly from the Isra Hana, but he's getting paid the schus of the existence of the Avodah Zarah. So that's the same over here. So Bavadai, the guy that draws the picture or takes the photo, cannot collect the fee. But the etzem taking of the picture and looking at it is fine. The one question that I still have, that I did not find any reference to yet, is what about selling the picture? The Maisa, according to one tradition, they sold the picture, and that was the whole reason of taking it. So the question I have still is selling the picture and making money, is that a violation of the Isra Hana or not? On the one hand, the Chora, this is classic getting Hana, financial Hana, from something which is Asur B'Hana. But the Chora, it's not true. And this is the side I'm leaning towards, although I've yet to find proof. But the Chora, that's not true. Because why would we say that the photo is Asur B'Hana? The body is Asur B'Hana. And looking at the body, creating the replica, creating the photo, isn't at all considered to be using the mace. You're just flashing a light on him and creating an imprint. So it exists, the schus that the mace existed, the Seder, but you didn't actually physically derive Hana. You intellectually created an image that looks like the mace. There's no real scientific connection, there's no physical connection between the photo and between the actual dead body. So now when I'm holding the photo, the photo isn't Asur B'Hana. So when I sell a photo, technically speaking, that should still not be Asur B'Hana. That is the shocking and fascinating story of the Maria Satz post-mortem photo. And apart from the wackiness of the sugya itself, it can be nogea to other areas of halacha too. For example, using photos of dead people to be matir agunos, which of course is a very lemaise and very useful thing. And l'chora, isn't that getting hana from a dead body? The woman becoming mutter from an igun, b'schus the photo? Again, l'chora, this will depend on the question. If you view the hana of looking at something and getting the information as a hana, like Rabbi Yitzchak Weiss did, that might be also. If you view it like Rabbi Yosef Schwartz did, and like I think the simple pshat is, then that will never be considered an Isra Hana. And this could be no get to many things. Taking photos of a murder victim at a crime scene in order to, of course, build up a case and find the murderer. So apart from the potential pikuach nefesh element, but getting the photo itself or the file, is that considered getting Hana from the mace or not? But of course, that should all depend on this general question of is habata, is histaklus, is looking at something which is Asur B'Hana, considered to be Asur B'Hana. And that is more or less it about the Maharal Sad's post-mortem photography.